Hi, I'm Adam Rabin.
And I'm Greg Skillman.
We've been writing songs together for almost 30 years, and there's even a chance you may have heard one of them.
And after all this time, we thought we'd look back and try to make sense of our collaborations and figure out what they mean to us now.
We'll be sharing interesting behind-the-scenes insight about the songs, answering your questions,
and challenging each other to a round of incisive and cutting questions. And if you think that's what's actually about to happen, then, well, welcome to Whale Helmet.
Today we're going to be talking about Full Power, which became popular, I guess you could say, through the Elephants of Scotland, but it existed long before that, right?
Oh, yeah. That was originally penned in 1991, I believe.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was that old.
Yeah, I think it predates you. It predates Magpie.
Yeah, just predates, I guess. So there's so much about the history and the evolution of the song, like how it started and then what it became, and then even after Elephants of Scotland, what I did with it after is all part of a long story about just one song. So let's just jump right into playing the song. And I was originally thinking of playing the studio version from our Home Away From Home album, but I have a feeling you'd rather hear the live version.
The live version, I really think, is the quintessential. It's the one you got to hear. It's pure honesty. It's beautiful.
Awesome. All right, so here's Full Power, live at Rozfest 2014 from Elephants of Scotland.
Thank you. full power.
Woo, elephants and Scotland!
Full Power is one of the very few romantic songs I ever tried to write. And it was written at a time when I had no target. You know, there wasn't anybody in my life that I was focusing these words on necessarily.
Huh.
But it was an ideal that I had in my head there was a simplicity to the behavior of the characters in the song. As surreal as the whole thing is with the marbles falling, et cetera, they're just sitting on the car hood. You know, it's just being together. It's not an adventure. Well, everything's an adventure, but, you know, we're not jumping out of planes or anything. So it was written at a time when I didn't have anybody in my life, but I was trying to create the ideal. And then when you formed Elephants of Scotland, you picked this as one of the original sets of songs that you were going to use of the lyrics I'd been sending you over the years.
So let me stop your story right there, because we should talk about how very shortly after we met, we'd only jammed together a few times, I think, you gave me an entire packet of lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really, looking back, I thought that was really an amazing thing to do, that there was this guy, this weird dude with this weird hair that you'd only played with a few times and we had kind of dabbled. And then you just gave me like all the stuff that you had worked on, some of it that you had turned into songs. Some of them were poems, some of them were lyrics. And you really just entrusted me with all of this stuff that had come from you.
Yes, I did. And thinking about it now, like, I was dying to have that kind of musical relationship with somebody. And you remember the crew that we hung out with, or that I hung out with in Hollywood, from that era. And I think a fair assessment of most of the people in that society is that they weren't really kind. You know, we all got along and we hung out, we had a good time and everything, but we were vicious when we talked about each other's music. It wasn't very supportive. It's like we were all different people and we were all coming at it from a different angle, and we were trying to make everybody's angles more like ours, ultimately. Most criticism is that. So I was hoping to find somebody that I could lay this stuff on. And a lot of the dudes from that era, there's no way I would have subjected myself to what they would have given me back, you know?
Oh, wow. I never really thought about it. I mean, I knew those guys also. And, I mean, you hung out with them a lot more than I did because you lived down there. I was about an hour away.
Yeah, it was a great time. I mean, I'm not looking back at that with any regret. You know, they served a very interesting purpose. And,
well, that's our 20s. You know, that was our early mid-20s. Do you think it was those people? Do you think it was it was musicians that are like that are not that supportive? Or do you think it was our age, that we were all at that certain proud age where we can only find value in cutting down others?
I think we all had different hopes and dreams of how all this was going to play out. A lot of those guys were, you know, make it or die trying kind of people. If you're going to be in a rock band, you got a lot of stuff to do. You got to be dedicated. But they took it to a different level, and it got real competitive amongst us all. And really, back then in the South Florida scene, there were probably 400 or 500 bands. right?
About that, yeah.
So it was a very competitive place, and it was tough to find somebody that I could really be open with. You know, the guys in Ludovico were like that. I could be open with them, and I found them after you and I had met.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think it was? Not that I'm fishing for compliments, but why did you trust me?
It was your vibe. It was your spirit. It's, you opened yourself up to me a lot with, You gave me a couple of tapes of stuff that you've been working on. I remember specifically a song called Glory, and you said the first 7 minutes, the first 7 minutes are a little slow. And I thought, oh, all right. So I'm listening to, I'm taking in the early Adam stuff, you know, I'm like, I'm hearing what, and the songs that we were writing is Magpie, you know, that was crazy. And I was just very instantly, at peace with the idea that you were going to be a good collaborating partner that wasn't going to, laugh at things they didn't understand in my lyrics. They'd ask questions.
Okay.
And there was, you know, so it was really more about just the comfort level. It's like, I fell in love with my wife really quick. You know, I was extremely comfortable with her very, very quick.
Likewise.
And
likewise.
Yeah. And I got that. I got the same thing with you, man. When we met, we hung out a couple times. I was like, yeah, I can write music with this guy. This is cool.
That's cool. Yeah. I had, I guess I had a similar feeling. I gave you that tape and, you know, I had handed those tapes out to anyone who would listen to it. And I think the fact that you came, that you listened to it, that I could tell that you actually did hear what was on the tape and all the weirdness. And because then, like now, like every song is different. And some of them, like you said, the first 7 minutes are a little slow, but then it picks up around minute 12. But it also, at the same time, those other weird little like minute and a half, 2 minute weird little glitches of songs.
Oh, yeah. Just, yeah, those little weird bits also completely sold me that, because we had a common thread in They Might Be Giants as a big influence.
Definitely.
And I think that we appreciated about them, you know, different things, but I always appreciated the freedom with which they wrote. They never gave a shit about what they were going to put together. And it always, it wasn't just like garbage throwing stuff together.
Yeah.
It was really well thought out. It was music, man. It went a lot of different directions.
Well, I think the musical impact that they and a few other acts around that time when I was really, you know, impressionable at that age, because I was like 19, 20, 21, the musicians that I gravitated toward were the ones who you could tell were making the music they wanted to make. And it's that constant like balancing act of, okay, am I making music for the right reason? Because I'm not making a living, you know, that's not, it's not my job. It's my, it's my enjoyment. It's my hobby. It's my
therapy is a good word, right?
Therapy. The other thing about Full Power, like, because that's what this episode is supposedly about.
Oh, right.
Is, so that's one of the lyrics you gave me, and you had actually written music for it already.
Yes, I did. Pretty different from what you came up with.
I would imagine. Yeah, I don't think I ever heard it. Did you ever play it for me, you think?
I don't know. I don't really think we talked about this lyric until after you had left Florida.
What I liked about it was that it was so unlike a lot of the other things you've written, and that it is, like you said, still a romantic tune. And that is a rarity for us to get involved with. Why do you suppose you wrote something of love song for something that wasn't real or you hadn't found yet? Probably a better way to say it.
Well, one thing I figured out is that whatever you want in your life, you kind of have to broadcast that message out there. You know, you attract things to you that compliment you. So if you go through life negatively, you're going to bring in a whole bunch of negativity. And if you go through your life writing weird stuff like I normally do, you're only going to attract weird people like yourself, Adam.
So it's your fault.
Company.
Okay.
Yeah, it's entirely my fault. But then, if you're looking for the right one, and you remember how I used to be. I wasn't particularly voracious in the woman department, mostly because I was looking for the right one. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there was a couple of candidates that showed up, but ultimately it ended up being Donna, and I met her in 1997.
Yeah.
Or we got married in 97. We met in 95.
Yeah.
But then when you played me the first Elephants version of that song, you know, I put it all together that even though Donna didn't exist at that time, that's who it was for, because I sent that broadcast message out, like, find me this person.
It's a really magical idea of a song writing the song to attract the fate that you want.
Without anybody hearing it.
Without any, it's that's like just, right. You didn't even, because there was no band, it wasn't performed, it was just written. So you gave me the lyric and I just hung on to it and I wrote this little thing with these two chords going back and forth. I just held on to that and I was like, well, I was doing Mailbox at the time, which was more geeky punk, more geeky poppy stuff. And I was like, well, this doesn't really fit into that. I'll just put it in a shoebox. And so this really gets into the meat of what I find fascinating about the history of the song is that I met up with Corey Cranston, who was the original guitar player in Elephants of Scotland. He was the one that I started the band with. And we got together one of our first writing sessions, if not our first writing session. I pulled out like those two chords, you know, the E and the F sharp, E, the F sharp. It wasn't until I kind of opened it up to another person, and he came up with the introduction. He had the introduction, those like ascending four chords, and they totally fit. You know, his chords were like E, F sharp, A, B, I think. And like they fit together so seamlessly that his intro gave context, gave form to my simple verse and chorus.
Yeah, you were so used to writing as a solo artist anyway,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of the bands that I saw you get involved with, you didn't stay involved too long, and I had the same kind of the same problems with the control of the material, trying to convince the other guy that the notes that I'm talking about are actually maybe a little bit better than the notes that you're talking about.
I don't know and, what you're talking about, man.
But no, yeah, I had that with Ludovico a lot. Me and the bass player, it was tough to convey to him like the speed with which I wanted him to play notes.
Yeah.
Which is a bad thing to ask an Islander.
And yeah, I mean, I had that mild frustration with Elephants at time, and totally my own doing. You know, not that they frustrated me, as I let myself get frustrated because they weren't in my head. You know, they weren't reading my mind. There were a few times where I recognized that, okay, I've got something, but I know it's not everything, and I know it's not enough. And that's one of those times where it's great to have bandmates. And there's this thing that I often wrestle with, and it's that very thing, and it's the difference between what I tell myself as synergy versus compromise. Like if I have an idea, if I have a song and I bring it to a group of people or anybody else, even one other person, will a synergy be created? Will the two of us or five of us together make it bigger and better, or will bringing it to another person only compromise my original idea?
Yeah, that's one of the levels of maturity as an artist that I think you have to achieve, is that, you know, the compromise that you might have to give up. You know, it's what I'm trying to say here is that an artist is in a very vulnerable situation when they turn their material over to other artists to help them with it.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, you want to say, all right, I kind of need you to do this, 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 and this exactly. And they're like, well, I'm not too interested in doing that because I'm hearing something entirely different, and you're not paying me anyway, so I'm going to move on. But the idea, but the idea of, you know, just opening yourself up and saying, okay, this is how I see this idea.
Mm-hmm.
What part of it do you see? And then letting that person find their part of that view.
Are you arguing that there is always something to be gained by opening up an idea to another person? By opening
up a song. No, it's more like saying, I accept what happens if I do this.
If you do what?
If you say, okay, I've got this part of a piece of art, whether it's music or words or a painting, whatever you got, play, and you say, okay, you want to work on it with me? You have to let go of that thing of, okay, but I need you to do it this way, this way, and this way, and this way, because you're opening this idea up to somebody else's interpretation. and their, and you know, the history of their existence up to that moment when they're involved in this project with you, that's what's going to shape their view of this idea. So what they create is going to be responsive and complementary to your original idea, but mm-hmm. you never put any of those notes in your head before, so they sound weird as hell.
Where I was coming from, and I don't want to go too far off on this tangent, is that there have been songs that I've brought to the band, and after 3 or 4 practices, I knew that this was the wrong band to bring it to. Something has been compromised that was not made up for, that was not compensated for with the little synergy that I'm getting from bringing it to the band. And the example of that I'll give is Trains That Never Come. Mm-hmm. I had brought that to the band and we played it for a few weeks. And I was like, yeah, it definitely sounds bigger. But at the same time, I was like, but it's come so far from the original intimate vision of the song that I ended up like abandoning it with the band. But with Full Power, even though it is like an intimate little ballad, we found something. I think there was something about the newness, the freshness of the band coming together, first with Corey, and then when Corey left, Lefty came on, and then Dan came on bass, and it just got bigger and bigger and more powerful, so to speak, each time, you know, a band member changed and came in. It was so much more of a vehicle. This song was so much more of a vehicle for additional input than I ever would have guessed.
Yeah, I'd have to say that too, because my original idea for it was kind of a mid-tempo with a lot of chords, power pop kind of song. And so when you hit the brakes on it and turned down the BPM and made it more of a lake than a rushing river, mm-hmm. I think it allowed I think it allowed the right animals to show up and drink from it.
I like that.
Let me tell you about when I first heard about that song.
Okay.
I remember you sent me a link to your demo of it, it was a recording that was going to go on the album. And I was actually between tech gigs and in a little bit of trouble, mm-hmm. and I had to be delivering pizzas to keep things moving. And I was delivering a pizza and I clicked on that link and I had it playing through the car stereo.
Yeah.
And about a minute into it, I just pulled over wherever I was and just sat there and listened to it. It blew my mind what you had done to it and how just big and beautiful and how much space there was within all of that beauty. And it really moved me when I heard it that night, because my situation was kind of bad at that time. But yeah, that made me so excited about the elephants and being a contributor.
Wow.
It just sounded so good.
It's kind of like I was reminding you of the hope that you had cast out not too long, a few years before.
Yeah, I was playing with Scott Martin up until about 2003 or 4 or so.
Yeah.
And then you and I did some spot stuff after that. But as far as it being a goal in life, I turned it into a hobby that just amused the hell out of me.
Nice.
And when things happen and you're driving around delivering pizza, it's still kind of in a good mood, even though everything's crappy. You know, you hear your old friend putting together this beautiful piece of music and it's like, the world's magical, dude. You know, you got to be broadcasting what you want, and yeah. it'll come get you. It'll get you in a different way every time too.
And it's one of those lyrics of yours that was so easy to just set right into a tune, and it's such a simple song. It's 3 verses. There's no bridge. And even the chorus is barely a lift from the verse. It's not like this huge, like, power pop song where it's like, here's the chorus, boom. You know, it's mm-hmm. very much just a continuation of the verse. It's almost like a B section of the verse.
So, you know, instead of collecting the power in a like really hooky, memorable chorus, what you did was you distributed the full power throughout the song. Like you created a landscape rather than a river. That's exactly the way to look at it, because most songs are rivers. You know, you got your verse, you got your chorus, and your bridge, and your chorus, and your bridge, and your chorus. And you know, it's running along. Mm-hmm. You know, that song, the sonic qualities of it are so lake-like, now that I'm really thinking about it. you distributed the power. You didn't force it in a certain direction.
So the word got out that we were this prog rock band, and the first festival we got in, first or second, I forget, like one of the shows, the first big show that we got invited to play, and it was turned out to be the biggest show we've ever played, was at the Gettysburg Rozfest in 2014. And it was so awesome. And, you know, I mentioned this at the very top, that it was this great opportunity. We had finished two albums. You contributed a ton of songs to the second album. And then we had this huge show in front of 800 people at this beautiful theater. And you and Donna came up. And it was almost like the band reunion, like all five of us were finally there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that was a great time.
Yeah. And then, and you guys, you and Donna were up in the balcony, right?
Yes. We had VIP tickets and we were up in the top row of the balcony. And before the show, I had to come down and find you guys. And I was surprised that you were all wearing the same blue shirt.
So were we, actually. It was not coordinated at all. Just the three of us up front just showed up with blue shirts.
Yeah, and somebody needs to dress you guys.
Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, so I found you guys and I said, so when is Full Power happening? And you told me it was going to be the third song. So like, aces, you know, go take care of it.
Yeah.
So I went back up and I told Donna that, and actually I've been telling her for years. actually, no, it wasn't years. It was when you told me this gig was happening. The first thing I thought was, I want to dance with Donna to Full Power.
Hmm.
I was like, I got to make that happen. And we did. And she came up and it was just crazy being on the other side of a festival. You know, even though it was a modest festival, 800 people, these were 800 passionate, loyal, devoted people to the prog rock, you know, spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, how many types of music can have 800 people show up at 11 a.m. ready to go?
Seriously. Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, any other kind of rock or pop music, no one is going to show up at 11 a.m. But yeah, we had a full house and I almost kind of just want to do like late morning, early afternoon shows from now on because it was such a good audience.
It was one of the best moments for me ever. It was like a confluence of so many wonderful things in my life happening simultaneously. And it was really special, man. It was really cool.
Yeah, it really was a special moment, like all over from both sides. So the epilogue of that song, I re-recorded it about a year ago, and I kind of brought it back to the intimate vibe that I thought it should have had. What did you think of that version?
I like the simplicity of it. I like you said, like the way you brought it all back down to its core elements. You know, the Gettysburg version is the paramount, but if we're wrapping up the show with your alternate take, that's the second finest expression of this idea.
Maybe we ended on that sweet note of the.
That was a sweet note.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll close it out there. We'll send our listeners off with the 2019 rendition of Full Power that I recorded as a solo artist. Until then, my good listener, visit imadeitup.com for links to our music and more information about this episode. You can find our music through imadeitup.com, and it's probably up on Spotify and Bandcamp and a bunch of other stuff. Tell your friends. Send us your questions and requests. We're always looking for stuff to talk about. So we'll leave you with more Full Power.
Stretched out on the platform. Moon girl gazes up and starward, bets on falling marbles, and the pot of love that sleeps inside wakens briskly. Full power. Lost in elevation, forgetting her umbrella. Moon girl runs, she runs for shelter, dodging falling marbles, and the pot of love that opens wide heads right for us. Full power. Full.